Hello, welcome to the Lately in JavaScript podcast. This is episode 26, and this is the ending of the year episode. Once again, with the great Michael Kimsel.
Yeah.
Hello, Michael. How are you?
I have one thing to say, and that is, if you're going to do it right.
Yeah.
Do it with me. Most people listening to this won't get that, but I do have to say, look at this.
Live
the Amazon box. This just came 3 minutes before we went quote unquote on the air. My Grails 2 book by Jeff Scott Brown and Graham Roche. Did I point at that right? Yeah, good work, guys.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, so I got some reading to do tonight.
So Grails is
awesome.
Equivalent to Ruby on Rails for Groovy. And Groovy sort of scripted Java, right?
Dynamic language for the JVM, interoperates with Java, and Grails is the web framework inspired to the extent that it was inspired by Rails in terms of the name, convention over configuration. But the what you are configuring or what your convention is over is largely around a lot of Spring MVC and Hibernate and Sitemesh and a lot of existing Java technologies wrapped in one package. So, I mean, I've said this before. I'm a huge Rails fan, been using it for a long time, and I just can't believe I got my new book. Okay.
you also have a... Groovy Magazine, right?
I do. GroovyMag.com. But
it was your plug.
Yeah, that's not what we're here for today. But
well, I would just mention that Groovy is scripted Java, JavaScript. It's almost on topic.
Almost. You were so close.
Yeah. Well, at least I tried.
You did try. We can't say that. I've always said Manuel is very trying. Yes.
Well, now back to the topic about JavaScript. It's, as I mentioned, we are recording this at the end of the year. Probably it will go live in a few days. Depends on when the transcription is ready. But we're as the final show of the year. I think it would be appropriate to cover some of the most happenings in the JavaScript world, but first of all, I think we will start with some of topics, some happenings in the JavaScript world in the last month, and then we can go back to that end of the year review, also expectations for the next year. So one topic that I would like to start commenting is about the Nash Horn. Let me try to screen share here.
Yeah.
This is basically, from what I understood, the JavaScript engine for Java.
Yeah, I saw an announcement about this. It wasn't the same one that you're linking to, but I saw an announcement about this recently, and I sort of don't know what... I mean, I get it, but I'm not sure if they're proposing that this is going to be bundled with JDK 8. So you'll get the JVM language, and you'll also get a JavaScript language engine together. It's not really a language because it wouldn't be running, not like V8, that sort of stuff. It would be running, it's the language that's going to get run on the JVM. So your JavaScript would be compiled down to JVM. It feels in some ways similar to Rhino, though that never, RhinoJS never really took off as much as I think people may have hoped it would. And I think part of that was performance. As much as it was on the JVM, I don't think Rhino was ever intended to be performant as a primary development consideration. And it looks like every announcement that I've seen about Nashorn recently, though apparently it was first announced about a year ago, everything I've seen has the term high performance or performant in it.
Yeah.
So that is probably a focus of it. So,
yeah, well, here in this news article, it says it was Oracle proposed it for OpenJDK. So, I'm not an expert on Java, but from what I got, OpenJDK is open source, right?
Yeah, that's my understanding. Is that that's where all major development is happening now. There isn't a closed. I shouldn't say this at all, but the majority of effort is going into the OpenJDK. Apple contributed a lot of their Apple-specific JDK stuff back into the OpenJDK project. And that's taken a while to filter over the last several, to get out to more people. So that's where JDK 7, a lot of the Java 7 stuff, a lot of people that I know running 7 now are running OpenJDK stuff. Yeah. It's been around for a couple iterations, but it was very not very tested or compatible. 6 kind of was. I'm running OpenJDK 7 now with a Grails project, as a matter of fact, and it seems to be running fine.
Yeah.
So having JavaScript at my disposal, I guess having server-side JavaScript at my disposal, if it's just something that's bundled and there's no major anything extra to install, if I can just run JavaScript code, if I have OpenJDK installed and run that or bundle that with traditional Java code, that would be pretty interesting.
Yeah, well, for people that probably are not much into Java, what would be the use of this project? Probably none, right?
Well, I mean, if you're not doing anything server-side Java, if you're doing server-side JavaScript, this might be a very good platform to do your server-side JavaScript on. So, you know, people that right now are doing a lot with Node, or maybe you're doing stuff with Rhino or something else, Nashorn may be something that you end up incorporating in the next year or two, depending on when it's released. So,
yeah, well,
there you go.
So, I guess you would already be using Java for some reason, right?
Me personally, I am.
No, I mean, whoever finds this useful.
Oh, well, let's back up. Let me repeat exactly what I said, but maybe with different words. People that if you're wanting to do server-side JavaScript right now, you're probably doing Node. That's just the most popular. But if you want to get into server-side JavaScript code, Nashorn may be something that you would choose instead of Node at some point because it may have better performance.
Are you sure?
Now,
you would suppose that it would have better performance for some reason?
I would suppose that it would for certain tasks, simply because of the optimism, because that's going to be JavaScript code that's ultimately running on the JVM, and the JVM can be optimized to run very, very, very fast. And there's a learning element, too. Now, I don't know to what extent the V8 engine does this, and there may be some optimization stuff, but there are, for long-running processes, the JVM has what's broadly known as hotspot, and it's effectively self-tuning. It will keep stats on how code is running. It's profiling code as it's running, and it will do optimizations to the code after it's running. So if your codes are running a certain way and certain memory is being used in certain patterns, it can self-optimize in a way that traditionally optimized or traditionally compiled code can't. It's compiled and optimized one time and then it's run. So that doesn't mean that Node is not good or fast. It just means that this may be another competitor in that field in the next couple of years.
Yeah. Well, that's probably an advanced topic too for most of the people that use JavaScript to
probably
figure out. But I'll publish a link to in the show notes too, so they can check it out, this news, and see if something that will be interesting over time. Well, moving on to the next topic, I would like to comment on another news. Let's switch to the right page. A library.
Is this aware? Is that what you're referring to?
Screen. Sometimes it gets. Yeah, because sometimes it gets stuck here, although this is not a slow machine, it's Windows here. So, well, anyway, this aware.js library, it's basically a library that will take in account whether a visitor of a page is returning, if it is the first time, and other statistics that may be interesting for you to customize parts of your pages depending on those factors. And I think it even defines some CSS classes that you can use to adjust the presentation of your page depending on whether it's first time the user is coming to the page or it's returning, if it is visiting the site for the first time in the current day. Well, several options are available. Also, the library itself has some I don't know if these are variables or functions, but you can check it out to to somehow dynamically adjust the presentation of your pages, to do some more something more customized for your users. I thought this is actually simple and interesting for to perform some customization, but that's all I have to say about this. Michael, did you check this library? Any thoughts you would like to add?
I've been waiting to say something. Oh, been waiting, waiting, waiting. I love it. I'm in love with this. Don't tell my wife. She's in the other room, but I am in love with this. It's phenomenal. Conceptually, I think you'd said it's simple. And I get it pretty quickly by looking at it. There's two things, if the guys or gals who wrote this happen to be listening, two things jump out at me that would make it... maybe three things that could severely increase the uptake of this and perhaps make this a de facto standard plugin for people to have. One is some sort of an integration, callback integration with Google Analytics, so that you could signal back to Google Analytics when somebody's looking at a page, which is the first or second or third time. You can get some of that anyway from Google Analytics, but it's being able to trigger certain events back to GA with this would be very good. Second and third things probably could be tied up into one, but would be making some themes for WordPress and or Drupal or something with this, but they probably can't do it themselves. Reaching out to some well-known people in the theming WordPress and Drupal theming marketplace and getting them to incorporate this, because the idea is great, but I think a lot of people are going to have a hard time doing this elegantly and doing this well. Thirdly, and I guess relatedly, would be, and this was actually my number two, but I moved to number three, is doing some Bootstrap themes, incorporating this with Twitter Bootstrap and having these guys maybe publish some sample Bootstrap layouts that have this as part of it. To me, that would be that would really help propel this into, it's a neat idea to everybody uses it. There you go.
Well,
that's my thoughts. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, well, I think they give an example which is based on the time of the last visit, show some
right.
content as new, give it some highlight, and that can be done with the CSS classes that they have defined in there. And, there may be other use cases. It's up to the developer to find, to use his imagination to find more purposes for this library. So kudos to for the developers for that. And now moving on to the next topic, I'd like to also bring, this is more a debate.
That's not the next topic. Okay.
Sorry?
I thought this could be the next topic, but I just want to get to my book, that's all. You're not seeing what I'm seeing, apparently. I was holding up the book in front of the screen, but you're not seeing it.
Oh, because I'm selecting the other window.
Ah, okay. So, gotcha.
I did not enable transparency in the window, so I could not see one through the other. Well, anyway, this is there is this article. Actually, I saw other articles that pretty much talk about the same things. In this case, Adam Hill on his blog is commenting that he considers callbacks a smell. I understand that the smell of something that is not very good about the style of programming that many developers employ, which is to use callbacks to handle some condition after some task has been done. And other than callbacks, you are also considering the use of events to trigger those actions at the end of something that happened, as well promises. Also mentioned here some control flow techniques, libraries that probably allow you to call different callbacks one after the other, and also named functions and modules. Well, several techniques to handle actions at the event. I'm trying to see if this can be read better. Well, basically, what he's saying that is callback, using the traditional way of callbacks is not very nice because you have to nest them. And
What was I saying a year ago or so? I think I remember saying, talking to you on this very show, async programming is hard. Having multiple nested levels of callbacks is very, very difficult for people to deal with. What Adam and many other people have done is, very few people would listen to me because I'm basically just bitching about something. They have demonstrated, and there has been, I've been hearing about promises for a while, but there has been some work in the JavaScript world to come up with better ways of dealing with this. That's great, and certainly, I'm not suggesting that my voice caused all this or that many people's voices didn't cause all this. It's a logical progression, but it's good to know, for me to know, that there has been a lot of work in this realm to come up with better practices. Because for me, the idea of trying to wade through, I did a Silverlight app a few years ago, and everything is async. Just everything is async, and every example we see is, well, just register a callback, just make a callback. It becomes very difficult to think about, and to think about where your code is and visualize this stuff. So any effort, any techniques to make this easier to actually program is welcome by me. I was not qualified to say what would be better. I just knew that the level of complexity that I was being presented with was not good. A smell, as they say. It's interesting. Yeah. That was, you know, we in the computer world would say, well, that's a smell. That's a code smell. And there's this implication. We should say it's a bad smell, because there's some things that smell really nice. A rose. fresh citrus smells fantastic. So just say something's a smell, the implication is that it's bad, and I get it, but I like some things to smell nice.
Right. I also agree that nesting callbacks is an L. That's something that somehow turned me down with Node.js and that stuff. I think it's nice to have all done asynchronously, because it will allow several things to run in parallel using only one thread to manage all, but it's not as pleasant as the synchronous programming that we got used to. Maybe because of that, we got so used to synchronous programming that when we see all this mess of nesting callbacks, it's really something very unpleasant. Well, on the other hand, I was not really sure if these promises really are much better than that, because it's just a matter of nesting your code, indenting your code, because it still looks to me like you are nesting functions.
You are some, but that's not the only way I've seen promises or deferreds used. They can be returned, and then you can I believe, and I think I'm thinking of the same thing, they could just be returned, and you can capture in a variable and then execute them later, and they will execute when they're ready to execute, if that makes sense. So your code can invoke them, but it won't execute until the value is... whatever process had returned it has said, yes, I'm actually done now. So he's recreated the same nested code above, and it's a little cleaner here, but yes, it is still largely chain, nest. But the idea of the syntax of promises and that concept, I think I like. I haven't done enough with it yet, but I was playing with a couple different async things just a couple weeks ago. So,
well, everything anyhow. In JavaScript is async, and well, maybe this is not a very good example of how things could be done to solve these conditions. Well, one thing that sort of scared me about having to handle asynchronous actions with callbacks was the fact that if you have to do it in a loop, you probably be calling nested functions too deep, and it probably blows some internal stack. I imagine. I'm not sure what is the internal implementation of
maybe.
The,
yeah.
And if you have just a small number of iterations, that may be fine. But if you are in a large loop, some application can explode sooner or later. I don't know. Well, that's why I still think that here and there it will probably make sense for Node.js to also provide some more synchronous versions of the functions. Actually, there are already some functions that they provide both synchronous and asynchronous versions, and that's probably because it's too annoying to deal with all that.
I will not disagree that it can be too annoying, in your word.
Yeah, well, let's see how this evolves, and probably get back to this later when there are some news. Well, moving on with the next topic, there are some news about WebRTC. Let me just screen share here if I can make it appear the right window. It's always a challenge. It's not guaranteed. Well, this is just the news from the HTML5 5 Rock site. And they just saying that WebRTC is available in a few more browsers. Mm-hmm. As usual, none of them is Internet Explorer. Microsoft lives in a parallel reality. They only follow the others when they figure it's too bad for them. And, well, it seems that WebRTC, at least some of its APIs, are available on Opera, Firefox, and Chrome. And I'm not sure about Safari, but, well, anyway, I'm also not an expert on this topic, but from what I understood, this is basically a set of APIs that allow you to communicate with from your browser.
Yep. I'll give you an example of this. I was pitching... I'm a fan of Twilio generally, but I was pitching OpenVBX as for a small call center project. And the downside, downside of Twilio happens to be more OpenVBX. They kind of courted a lot of small developers like myself a couple years ago, and somewhat seemed to have dropped the ball on that. And as of 6 weeks ago or so ago, we were doing a demo. The OpenVBX lets people register accounts, and so they can be different call center users, for example. Or so when a phone call comes in, it can get routed to different people. Well, the call would come in, and there's a way to configure some of this at raw code, but OpenVBX did not provide any way to do this. So a call would come in, but it into somebody's browser. So the calls are getting routed to people's browsers directly, which is pretty good. But it used a Flash applet for everything. And so a call would come in and somebody would click the applet thing, and then it would pop up the standard Flash, "Oh, we want to use your microphone. Do you want to allow it or not allow it?" And if you said no, and some of you are out there probably have dealt with this, you'd say somebody would accidentally hit no. There's no way to ever bring it back. You just, nope, hey, you didn't want to use the microphone, so screw you. You can never use this computer again with Flash, with this website. That was a usability issue. There were some configurability issues. I had to hack it a bit. They seem to have abandoned OpenVBX to some extent. And then about 2 days after we made the decision to not use it and go with another product, Twilio announced, hey, WebRTC is now part of our Twilio something or other. And I wrote to one of their people and said, is this going to be supported in OpenVBX? And they said, well, it should be already. It wasn't. And then I got an email a few days later saying, it's in the latest version. It's just got updated. So now your browser can have a call routed to it if you're using, I think at the time it was Chrome, but probably in the next month or so, Chrome or Firefox or something. So rather than having to have that Flash thing, it'll just come and use the native stuff in Chrome, which is, in those sorts of situations, if you're like in a call center, you can just tell everybody you got to use Chrome for your phone. You just be logged in with Chrome. That's fine. So the lack of IE support in verticals, I don't think is really going to hurt. It's certainly not going to hurt WebRTC adoption. It's going to hurt IE's user base in those environments. And no. I'm sorry that took so long, but that was a real world example of my being impacted on WebRTC adoption pretty recently. Now, had all this happened like 2 months ago, I think we probably would have ended up going with Twilio and OpenVBX.
So you have already used WebRTC, or just in?
Well, I played with it after we made the decision to not go with that. I did play with it, and I had a call, and I did some sample calls, and they came in. They come into Chrome, and I'm just talking into my microphone directly into the browser rather than having a Flash applet. And to that extent, it's really just a progression from if you've used Chrome, if you use some search boxes, some text boxes, will have the little microphone on there, so you can click that and talk into it. I think your audio actually goes to Google to be translated, but it's It's kind of the next step from that. It's actually connecting, the browser is connecting directly to your audio. And I think you can do video with it. The samples in your screenshot were showing video too, so hook into your webcam as well.
Well, actually, it also shows, let me share again, show some chat windows. So that is why I was wondering.
I don't think the idea of the chat windows, I don't think that is
just a log.
Yeah, I don't think that's a direct part of WebRTC, but I may be wrong in that. I may be missing something, but I think that is probably just somebody's chat code that they have running there.
Well, it shows some. I think this is a screenshot. Well, it shows here a form with some text to be sent.
Well, streaming screen capture. You can do that. So capture the visible area of a tab as a stream, which can be used locally or with RTC peer connections.
Well, that's a great feature. So as for chat, there are plenty of chat applications that do not need WebRTC. So that would not be the greatest.
I think I'm actually wrong on this. The idea of there is just a data channel part of the WebRTC API, and it looks like you could use that for doing peer-to-peer you connect a channel to somebody and you'd be part of a chat. So it looks like that may be part of it. The downside, because I've actually had to recently implement a chat system, and there's a lot of interesting chat tech out there. This would be another aspect of that, but I need to be able to support, if not IE6, at least IE7. And so I've ended up going back with really primitive stuff just because I know it will work, even if it's slow. It'll work on everything, as opposed to, hey, here's some really cool really advanced JavaScript socket stuff, and it works with this and fallbacks and all that stuff. It's just I'm getting off topic here a little bit, but it looks like that's what that data channel. That's what they mean by data channel in your tab there.
Well, at least this feature being able to stream your a tab on your browser.
Yeah.
I think it is a great feature because it will enable a lot of applications that otherwise probably you would have to resort with some other tricks like Java or something else to capture what is on screen.
Yeah.
Well, let's keep an eye on this and see what developments we can expect from it in the future. And let's move on with the next topic. And this is actually related to the
Keep going.
Because I had to do some developments. Add some developments. But that's a power drink.
Red Thunder.
It's a bit blurred
Red
here.
Thunder.
But,
I was trying to do my radio voice there. Red Thunder.
Oh, you always have a radio voice.
You want to hear this? Here we go. Did you hear that?
Yeah. Now let's figure out the transcriber. We'll transcribe that.
Okay.
It's just transcribed as schlep.
Yeah.
Well,
that was a bottle top opening. Okay.
Back to the topic that I wanted to cover. Recently, I've been actually enhancing some of the user interface for the feature that I introduced recently in PHP class and JS classes about the system levels and missions. And let me screen share the right page here. Basically, I wanted to implement some enhancements that would make it more obvious to the users what happened and what's next. So I developed a simple plugin to an animation library that I have that will allow the user to see what's next, like circled in the page. But it's better to show than just tell. Okay, here we go. So when the user arrives to his status page, he just shows some messages. There is a progress bar animating here. And the next thing that the user has to do is this mission here. And it appears with a circle that is drawn with a canvas object. And then it clicks here, and another circle here clicks appears. So there is this pattern of using this nice animation tool. So the user pays attention to whatever is the next thing to do. And anyway, the topic that I wanted to bring is that I wanted to style these graphics, these lines that appear here with CSS, and I could not figure a way to do it. I mean, the properties of the graphics on drawn on canvas are totally new to CSS. CSS does not support them in any way. They have new names like line width and line cap. Well, several of those properties that are not supported. So I even went to a CSS community. Now that Google Hangouts has communities, I went to see the CSS community on Google Hangouts and asked somebody, but nobody knows. And I think this is an obvious gap in the HTML5 canvas. Why they didn't plan it to have some styling support, so you can define the styles. Well, I define it here, but these properties do not exist, line width and line gap. And I post this message, and obviously nobody understood that. Maybe I was asking for something too advanced that not even W3C could anticipate, or am I wrong? Michael, what do you think? Do you think there should be some support in CSS to define these properties of canvas?
I don't know. I don't. If you can define it programmatically, if you can do it programmatically, you should probably be able to CSS it. Now, what reaction did you get from people in terms of asking, you know, why isn't there support for this? Did you get any reaction at all?
No, I didn't ask to W3C because I looked at the timelines of specifications. It seems that 5.0 is practically done, and they are already planning on 5.1. And anyway, since I needed it, I just needed an answer, yes or no. Can I style it now with the CSS? And the answer is no. I didn't even go there and ask anybody if they'll plan it to the future, but I think they should.
It feels like it's something that probably should be done. There's a, you know, politically or technically in any project of this size, something getting implemented, there's always a balance. How much do you put out that isn't, it's useful, you know, some of this is useful and it would be more useful with something else, but do you wait until everything is done before you put it out? It would surprise me a bit if there's absolutely no plans for it ever to be, for any of it ever to have any programmatic styling at all. But it would not surprise me if we see it in the next couple iteration, next couple releases of future things.
Right.
That probably wouldn't surprise you either. But
Well, what we have seen historically is that many of the things that later became part of the standards were introduced in the browsers first, regardless if the W3C people there anticipated the need. But I didn't see it supported in the browsers either. All those styles have to be set on JavaScript. And, it's not a big problem. I just want to separate the configuration of the presentation details from the actual programming of the animation in this case. I thought that's what CSS was for, to separate those things.
Yeah. But well, the answer is no right now. Maybe right. I would tell you that the source code for many of those browsers is out there. It's open source. You can grab that and perhaps make your own styling engine that extend the styling engine to support that, and then patch it back. Send it back.
I hardly have time to develop my own code.
That's
a Rasmus-like answer.
Just fix it yourself. Fix it. If obviously it's not that important to you, if you're not willing to just go in there and learn the past 15 years of hundreds of people's source code, and understand that,
and spend
obviously you're just a flake. You're flaking out. It's not important to you. It's trivial. Just get it away. Yeah. You don't need it.
Well, it's not vital, but it would be nicer. So that's why it's not important for me. But I think people, it shouldn't be just me that having this need to separate the styling of canvas graphics from from the actual programming. And well, anyway, I actually also wondered if SVG can also be styled from outside. I think it can, right? I mean,
I haven't done enough SVG to know. Now, yeah. I think you can do VRML. I think you can style your VRML with CSS.
But that's a totally different subject.
I did it without laughing. Come on. 1997, VRML. Oh, sweet. I can move around in my browser in 3D.
Yeah. For a moment, I thought you were saying VML, which is...
No, that would be like you could hit the forward key, and it would do this, and hit the back key, and it would do this. Wow.
It was amazing.
And if you combine that, if you hooked it up to sync with your push server, man, you would take over the world.
Well, yeah. We never know. It's too advanced in that technology.
Yeah, some of those things, I think the government killed some of those. Push technology, man, that was it. Marimba. Woo.
Well, that is really old. That is early web.
This is two old men talking about stuff that has no impact on anybody from 15 years ago.
Oh, well. Well, but talking about the past and the present, I think now it's the right time to just do an overview of what was the most important things that happened in JavaScript world in 2011.
Oh, in JavaScript.
Well, won't you...
Well, this was important and it happened to me. Can you see this?
Yeah.
You see it? It's called a bullet train or bullet rain. It's a wireless keyboard holder, but it's got a space from a trackpad.
Oh, for a moment I thought it was your Surface computer.
No. I got this year, and I got a pink keyboard cover from a keyboard.
Oh, nice. That's cute.
Yeah. Yeah. they helped me, but to relate it back to the podcast, they helped me to do JavaScript better.
Really?
There you go. Yeah.
That's your review in 2011.
My review. I got stuff that I like. Well, no, because it matches, the pink matches my keyboard, matches my the rest of my computer case, so that it's a bit of a soothing effect. But also, this, I can lean back, I can sit back, wireless keyboard. You know, I've tried wireless keyboards in the past, but until I got something sturdy enough to hold everything together and add a bit of weight to it, they just felt too flimsy. So, first world problems. My keyboard is too flimsy when I sit back in my chair. Yeah.
So,
but other things that have happened, other people in the JavaScript world. How about you share something that you think has happened that's been an impact?
Well, actually, we have commented a bit about this before recording, and well, at least from my perspective, it was basically more of the same. I didn't see many new things happening in the JavaScript world, somehow indirectly related, or maybe directly related with JavaScript. I like that initiative of the web platform side, although it's still what they call it alpha, but... Yeah. Because nowadays when you want to research something about some JavaScript standard library, more than often we stumble into the W3 school site or Stack Overflow, which it's still not the official source of information, but it's the best that we have. And I think for web developers in general, not just JavaScript developers, we could use something that looks more official, more organized, and well, that's something that is still a promise. It's not a callback, it's a promise.
It's not a callback, it's not a deferred, it's not a future, it's a promise.
Yeah, and other than that, I didn't see much coming as new. By the end of last year, Adobe bought PhoneGap. I didn't see much.
That was a death knell. Nothing happened there.
Nothing happened there, except for the Cordova project, which seems to be.
It's just sitting there.
Yeah, I don't know. Is it going anywhere? Sometimes we wonder: is it this Adobe trying to kill a product? It's somewhat it's a competitor of Adobe Air.
I think it's more than that, or maybe less than that, depending on your perspective. I can't think of many. tech projects, tech companies or projects, large or small, that have been acquired by another company that have actually gone on to do anything else. It almost every example I can think of, an acquisition meant the end of the project, either because it was a competitive thing and it got folded in, or they just, it was a talent acquisition. They were hiring those people and they got intellectual property, they got some of the people, but those people weren't allowed to continue to do what it was that made that project successful in the first place.
Right.
I'm struggling here to think of any major acquisitions that have happened at all. So I don't think it's really anything specific to Adobe or Cordova or the PhoneGap people at all. I think it's probably more endemic of the nature of tech acquisitions in general.
Yeah.
Now, I will throw out one of the things that I sort of agree with you, more of the same. A lot of what we've seen in terms of the last year or so has been iterations. We've got new versions of iPhones, new versions of iPads, new versions of Androids. All of those are in their, depending how you look at it, the third or fourth or fifth iteration or generation of their operating system and their hardware. And these two behemoths are advancing mobile computing. And to the extent that mobile is having an impact on what we call more traditional desktop computing, desktop internet stuff, there's with OS X, we're seeing sort of a merging of the iPad interface and the OS X interface. We're seeing an impact on again, this isn't JavaScript so much, but just more the idea of mobile computing. Some people will talk about they don't design for mobile separately. They do mobile first. They think about tablets and smartphones first, and then think of how can you make the larger desktop experience better, rather than desktop first and mobile second. To the extent that we've had a lot of interesting JavaScript libraries come out that have made a lot of nice UI things and a lot of nice async stuff a lot easier to do across multiple smartphone devices and desktops. That's been interesting, but it hasn't been revolutionary. We've seen these from 3 or 4 years ago, and they're consolidating and they're getting better. And I think it's probably easier for some of these things to come out because we're seeing a consolidation in the mobile, continued consolidation in the mobile marketplace. I'm leading up to Windows 8. Which I had really hoped, that's been one of the quote unquote big things this year. And it was one of the few things that I think has happened in the JavaScript world or in the web world, that had the potential to be more of something that wasn't just continuation and more of the same. The idea of you build your apps for the Windows platform on JavaScript, and then you distribute them to it's revolutionary for Microsoft, and it had the potential to be revolutionary across the board. We haven't seen an impact. We haven't seen much of an impact on that yet, or from that yet. This stuff all came out around the holidays. I mean, really, the Windows 8 stuff, they had to compete with. I mean, for in terms of market share, mind share, and advertising dollars, they had to compete against Indycom first off. So I think they were at a bit of a disadvantage there. They had a lot that they were up against too, not just iPad minis and new iMacs and all that stuff. And they had a lot. They were facing competition on a lot of fronts. So, in 2013, will there be an impact, or what will the impact of Windows 8 be across 2013? I would like it to be very positive for Microsoft. I'd like it to be positive across the board for developers and consumers. I don't think it will be as impactful as they hoped.
Yeah.
But it's still, again, IndieConf's over for a while. They've got time to recover and rethink how they're going to attack the marketplace.
So, yeah. Right.
I'm going to lay low for a few months and give them a chance to
recover their report.
Yeah. Well, really, I don't think it was fair. I don't think it was fair.
Yeah. IndieConf obfuscated Microsoft.
Yeah.
It was almost a tie, but in the end, IndieConf managed it. Well, for 2013,
I had more people show up at my event than they've had show up at some of their stores. So, and I'm not over exaggerating on that.
That was cruel, but it's very true.
It's true. That was a cruel jab, and I just had to get it in there. But
you've been years waiting to say that.
Oh yes, it took me 3 years. I could have said a Sony store instead. I could have said Sony. Yeah. That's fine.
Well, I don't know. Well, talking about Microsoft, I think it may makes sense to have touch screens on notebooks and desktops. I don't think desktops are dead, as many claim, because if you want to, for instance, do some work, you need a large screen. You are not going to use a tablet for that. Not probably not even a small notebook for that, because large screens are heavy, and you don't use notebooks would become too heavy to be called notebooks if they would use large screens. So there is plenty of market there, probably much less now that tablets are becoming popular. And well, anyway, for me, I've been planning. It's still not something that I'm well acquainted to develop some native apps for mobile, but I certainly want to use some JavaScript framework like or whatever you call it, PhoneGap or Titanium. Well, I listened something about Titanium that I didn't like much. It's that all of the sudden, if you publish an application, all of the sudden they come after you and charge you $5,000 of license. Yes. Well, the licensing is not very clear when they
I've known a lot of people use Titanium over the years. I'd never heard that. I did hear that. I read that story, and that seemed to be very much a rogue company trying to get money out of somebody. You may find other resources. If anybody listening or watching wants to tell me that I'm completely wrong, I still have I still have faith in Titanium or AppCelerator as a company. I don't think that was I don't think that was sanctioned by them. I don't think they knew what was going on. I may be wrong, but I've done too much, and I haven't done that much with it. But I'm on their mailing list. I get some stuff from them. I know other people that have been using it successfully for a couple of years, and they've never reported anything like that. So, I would say continue, give a shot to you. Don't let that hold you back. But I would suggest to you that you try Windows 8 and build some Windows 8 stuff. Partially because there's going to be much less competition in that store.
Well, I don't know yet. Well, anyway, I'm pretty much decided to go for JavaScript and HTML5 and CSS, whatever, be PhoneGap or...
But you can do that with Windows 8. You can do that. Windows 8 is all HTML, JavaScript, CSS.
Doesn't PhoneGap generate applications for Windows 8 from...
If only there was some sort of a way we could ask some engine that could search for information for us on the internet.
There is a new one called Google.
November 1st, 2012, PhoneGap 2.2.0. We are proud to announce support for Windows 8. You can take your PhoneGap apps written to the Windows Store. There you go. So, okay, so go PhoneGap then. If that's what you want to break my heart and hurt me, that's fine.
Why breaking your heart? You prefer Titanium?
Just because I suggest something and you continually stamp me down.
No, I have not decided anything. I still have to make time to research, but I just did not quite like it. It's not even the amount, it's the surprise. When will they charge you? What amount do you charge you? And,
they won't.
And if you... Well, I don't know. I heard it in the TechZine podcast. I think it was Jason Roberts that commented on it.
It all came from one major... It came from one person's story, and it made the rounds a few months ago.
Actually, they are commenting on somebody else's story, and right. You're right. Probably that's a single case. I did not hear any other cases. Now that we are mentioning, what is your take on PhoneGap versus Titanium? Why do you prefer Titanium?
I wouldn't say I'd prefer Titanium. I've used Titanium a few times. I did one thing with PhoneGap, one sort of hello world sort of thing with PhoneGap. So I cannot speak authoritatively on the differences of the pros and cons at all. So move on.
Yeah, well, I talk
about
it too with Arthur Sossin. He said that the PhoneGap would probably slower because they use some sort of proxy, but that's all that we talked about. I'm not sure what is the...
PhoneGap 2.2.0 also includes improvements to the iOS and Android JavaScript to Java Bridge. Your code now will now execute 15 to 25 times faster. November 1st. So, yeah, so to whatever extent that there may have been some slow proxy issues there going between Java and JavaScript, it looks like they've nailed a lot of that. So take that, R-Tours.
Well, actually, it talked to me about that a longer time than that. It's not it was before those recent news. I think JavaScript will continue to grow in 2013, and that's no longer news. We can stop talking about it.
I don't know. I think you're really going out on a limb there. That's a pretty bold prediction. Are you sure?
What do you mean? Are we going to get back to?
Is that your final answer?
Lisp.
I don't know. We might have something.
Yeah. It reminded me of something that Matt Mullenweg commented that WordPress will be more and more JavaScript. I don't know if he meant on the browser side or on the server side.
I think he meant on the browser side, at least for now. I was being facetious with you. Yes, I think it's obvious JavaScript will likely continue to grow and be a more integral part of a lot of our computing experience. The one weird thing to me is that because we are a little bit more in walled gardens in the Apple ecosystem, especially in mobile, and even Chrome in general, just auto updates. If at some point either one of these, you know, we talked before about Dart, for example, Google's maybe pushing something out. If Google and or Apple came out with a alternative embedded scripting language. They said, you know what? Yeah, JavaScript's still there, but we're now putting all our effort behind Lua, and Lua is going to be embedded as a scripting thing, and we're going to have DOM hooks to Lua, and it's there, and we've been using it internally for 6 months, and they just start auto-updating and pushing that out. JavaScript in the browser really could go away pretty quickly, and I'm not suggesting at all that it would, but the degree to which we are all networked and we all have devices that it's in some sense controlled by other people, auto-updating software, it could conceivably happen that they could roll out something else, a complementary language, very, very quickly. And I don't think that would have been feasible 10 years ago, five years ago. Well, I just won't update. Well, most of our software just auto-updates. Now, browsers typically will do that. So
the trend that we already seen, it's not even new, is that JavaScript is taking over many areas on which it would not be a natural choice, like a mobile. And mobile is getting larger and larger every day. I think even it's a bit silly to have to call mobile small screen, because it won't be small screen for much longer, because lower cost devices are getting larger screens, and all that effort to make it responsive probably will not be so much worth as it is today, because what you will be doing is the same as you do for desktop. You just use regular CSS and assume a minimum size.
I don't want to veer off too much, but I'll mention something very briefly that I saw. I think it was on Reddit the other day. There was a link to a research video by Microsoft Research. They were talking about the latency on mobile devices and touchscreens, and I think it was an iPad, but they weren't showing the name iPad on it. But they were talking about touch latency, responsiveness. And right now, most tablets and smartphones have a latency of somewhere, when you touch it before there's a reaction, it's somewhere between 50 and 100 milliseconds. I think something was as slow as or as fast as 50, but 100 is about the average. And they demonstrated doing things at 100, and then at 10, and then at 1. And even at 100, you can tell you're doing stuff and you have to wait. 10 is pretty good. 1 is pretty much instant. You are, when you're interacting, you feel that way. And they're talking about what they're trying to, they didn't talk specifics, but that's a goal, is to try to get that down, to get that latency down. The hardware is going to be part of that, but the languages themselves, as we're writing JavaScript and we're writing other apps, they're going to have to support dealing with real-time event processing in the region of 1 millisecond, which will be interesting to see how JavaScript as a client-side language, is it just going to be, hey, we're going to have 10 gigahertz computers at some point, or 10 gigahertz CPUs, and that will fix it? Or will there be something that happens at the language level or at the compiler level to support that? Because it's not all just, I mean, it probably could all just be hardware at some point, but that seems wasteful. I think there's probably more we could do at the language level.
There's yet another stab of Microsoft at Apple, right?
There you go.
Oh, you didn't say that.
And, well, I got off topic there a little bit. I didn't mean to so much, but that we talk about JavaScript
right,
on mobile
right.
and on devices and on desktops, but it lives, it runs on hardware, and the speed of the hardware, the CPUs, and the responsiveness, the screens, all that stuff, it's all part and parcel of the same thing, yes.
Well,
On
that bombshell, we did not say very much of the past and the present and the future of JavaScript. But what we mentioned, something we commented in the past episode is the somehow ECMAScript 6 will become. The standard will be finalized and. We'll see how the browsers will evolve to that standard or not, because the JavaScript world has been dealing well without the new features, classes, and the other stuff, lots of other stuff. And let's see if there is going to be any evolution on that. Probably not on browser side, but maybe on mobile or on the server side, on which the version of the JavaScript engine that you are using is more controlled. Well, let's wait and see on that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, from what I can remember, there is nothing more important. Anything else regarding past and the future of JavaScript?
No, I'm sure we'll be talking about the future later on.
Of course.
In the future.
Well, talking about the future, let's move on to one of the final sections, which I recall I did not prepare, which it would be to pick a couple of classes that were published in JS Classes site. But
I've got a couple I can mention briefly that I was impressed with.
Let me just do something that mentioned some happenings, and you probably pick another other than that you seem to have already picked. Let me just screen share something here about the there is. I just tweeted recently that. Finally, the goal of the Innovation Award challenge of having 200 classes published in the JS Classes site was achieved. And starting in January, the Innovation Award that goes on in PHP Classes site since 2004 is going to start also in JS Classes site. And that is just waiting here to get it started. And other than that, I would like to thank you to all the authors that submitted all these classes. There is a ranking here, and as promised, the let me just increase the font here so you can see their names. Arthur Sozins, Dixon Santiesteban, Mark Rolich, Mark Lowe.
Mark Lowe.
Probably a nickname, Martin Barker. They will be entitled to receive one wonderful. Let me stop the screen sharing if I can. This is always a challenge. One wonderful. PHP elephant.
That's great.
I think a great part of the contributors of the JS Classes site are also contributors of PHP Classes site, so they will appreciate it. So all of you guys, thank you for your participation. It was very important, not just you that won, but also the others that contribute to reach the goal of 200 packages, especially in the latest month that got a lot of many new packages that we are going to talk about now. We have let me screen share back the entries here. We can see a lot. This is probably also the result of the encouragement of the systems level submissions. We have here 14, I think, packages, and many of them do very interesting things. Michael, which ones do you think would be worth commenting this month?
This month? A couple that jumped out at me. First one was crosswords. Do you have it up there? I can share. I'll share my. Yeah, I think I can share my screen. Share what's on my. I'm hitting share screen. There we go.
It's a bit retarded.
Slowed down, certainly. Can you see my screen there? Crosswords.js. This is a very. It's a crossword isn't really the right word. It's more of a word find. Crosswords are the you get the black and white squares. But it's still interesting. And this is a it's a Node.js sort of app, or it's written to run in Node.js, and you pass it information via command line. This is
can
the actual
code.
Can you
just increase the font, please?
I can. This is I just did. I don't know why it's not there. No. It's from Igor Escobar, and I don't have what country he's from offhand, but...
he's from Brazil.
Brazil.
Yes, I remember I actually talked with him. I promise you would send a lot of classes, so he's...
Cool. Well, this, I mean, that's some of the code there, but the interesting, the easier thing to get an idea for this, just look at the screenshot. So you'd say, Node.js, or Node start JS, here's the words... and Node game crossword. Well, we can see the second, I don't know if you can see it, I can't highlight here, but second from the bottom, the very left side of the screen, N-O-D-E, down here, if you see my mouse moving. I don't see my mouse moving. So the words are in there, and then there's random letters in the rest of the place. Game is up at the top right, G-A-M-E, going down. So this was, from a JavaScript standpoint, this is certainly a little bit different than some of the stuff that we often see in JS classes. The purpose of this is a little bit different than a lot of the, it's not a browser interactive, it's not effects, it's not, any sort of client server stuff. It's just a server-side app. But it was interesting. I looked at it and said, this is kind of neat. I like this. The second one that jumped out at me was jQuery Calcs. And this is from Iksan from Indonesia. Hello, Iksan. I've got his code up here just to give a quick example of this. And I have not dived into it. I admit I was just attracted by the name and the description of it. But the idea here, I wish I could highlight this. The idea here is that you write formulas in data format and data in the data attributes. So you can say... why is that showing up there? Ignore. So you can say what formula should be applied to data in this particular input. So we want to take, this should be formatted as a currency with two decimals. And the formula over here is the price times the quantity minus or times the discount. So interesting idea. I've had to deal with letting people define and input formulas in websites sometimes, and this is certainly an easy way to just tell somebody, hey, make data dash formula equals something in the browser, and then have jQuery, a jQuery plugin modify it. So impressive. Both of those this month struck me as interesting.
Yes, actually, this one by Iksan from Indonesia. Well, what I noticed it is interesting. I don't know if you noticed in the code, part of the code is generated by JSON. JSON, it's the equivalent of Bison for C or C++, I'm not sure. Basically, you provide a grammar and it will generate code to parse expressions. Some language, which in this case is those formulas, it uses that generated code by JSON to efficiently parse the expressions all done in JavaScript. And I think it's the first time that we see a component that uses JSON here. Well, anyway, this is a great idea. It makes perfect sense to do that in this case because you can have complex expressions to automatically evaluate the values of certain inputs depending on others.
Yep.
Like for instance, in an e-commerce site, you can have the page that shows what you are ordering and it calculates the prices.
Yep.
Depending on quantities and whatever the products is selected. So, kudos for X and for that. Well, on my part, I also would like to comment on a couple of classes. Let me screen share here first. Okay, I think I need to increase this. The first one that I would like to comment is this one, 15 Puzzle by Mark Rolich from Armenia. Mark has been contributing a lot of good classes. Also, somehow they are games or something like that. In this case, it is a puzzle of 15 pieces around a board that you need to use the empty space to move the pieces. All this is done with this object that is shared. So it's a great for those that would like, even if they are not interested in the game itself, they can look at the class to learn how to do several things, like managing the events of a game and rendering the board. So this is an interesting class for everybody to study. Other than that, I also like to comment another class from Mark Lowe. I think his nickname is from Romania. This one is named Volume and Surface Area Calculator. This is an object that does some calculations on solid objects, provides several measures of the objects, and if you need to deal with 3D objects and somehow need to have these calculations in your application for some reason, you can take a look at how this was done by Mark Lowe. So kudos for Mark Lowe also for his contribution. Well, regarding classes this month, I think that's all for now. Let me stop the screen sharing here if I can. And next year, as I mentioned, there will be the Innovation Award. I'm still asking several companies that could be potential sponsors, and I have already contacted a couple. One of them is very famous, Web Dev Publishing. I don't know if you are familiar with it. No, you are not familiar, right?
No, not at all.
No. Oh, well, Web Dev Publishing, as you may be aware, is the company that Michael founded for publishing magazines. You'll be, I think, contributing a subscription of the JS Mag, right?
Yes.
Yeah, there is also a sponsorship from PACT. They also sponsored the PHP Classes Innovation Award. So they'll be giving away a book, which would be printed or ebook to one of the winners. And I have several other companies that I've been trying to contact. But since this is a recent event, only like a couple of weeks after confirmation.
Only the cool companies are in.
Yeah. So though only those that actually replied before, they have the confirmation. But I expect several other cool companies that can also participate as sponsors. What they will get is good exposure to their products. As the JS Classes community grows, they'll get exposure. All they have to do, there is no money involved in this sponsorship. All they have to do is to give away a prize and deliver it to one of the winners that is nominated in a month. And this is an initiative that has worked well in PHP Classes site because it gave a lot of exposure to the work of the developers that submit innovative components, and as well to the sponsors that gave away prizes. So any other company that eventually maybe somebody of that company may be watching this podcast, feel free to contact me if you want to become a sponsor. The prize that you need to give away must be relevant to JavaScript developers. So don't contact me if you are a hosting company, because that is not exactly a JavaScript specific thing. that's just anticipating one frequently asked questions from hosting companies.
Okay.
But I have other offers for other types of companies that I had to turn down because the prizes were not very relevant to JavaScript. Well, given that, let's move on to one of our final sections, on which Michael will comment about upcoming topics, articles on the JS Mag magazine.
Well, I was actually looking this up because it looks like somebody has I'm getting off topic here. Sorry, there's a couple of pieces that I know are going to be out. One is a piece from Janine Meyer on moving images on the screen and some techniques for following images around as you move your mouse. And another is actually a much larger piece. This I don't think we expected it to be this large, but Mike Schwartz, who has traditionally written for us on the development of his server-side JavaScript platform called Silk.js, has switched gears, and he said, I want to do something on front-end game stuff. So he's got a very, very large piece on 2D game development with Canvas and JavaScript. So those are what I know so far. We've got a couple others that we are trying to wrap up in the next couple of days to get out in early January. So before I commit myself to anything else, I'll just say those are what we know for certain.
Yeah, well, that's always great. Other than that, I think you've been trying to hint us about something you may be working on that we can read in your subtitle.
Oh,
there's okay. A domain in there. Oh,
awesome. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that.
Oh, that, but yeah, I'd actually forgotten about that. Yeah, as a matter of fact, that's, well, I mean, you can go to the domain name if you'd like. I'm not showing any screenshots here, but this is, I'm looking for feedback on this idea more than anything right now. So if you're a theme of what I do when I talk about stuff, it tends to work around freelance stuff. I work in the web world. I work with JavaScript, work with PHP, work with Grails, work with stuff, but, I do it all under the umbrella of self-employment. Freelancing, whatever you want to call it. So that's always top of mind for me. And I've been, this is really the second attempt at doing this, but I've collected and am collecting a lot of my thoughts and a lot of questions that I get from people. One of the things that came out of this a few years ago was IndieConf. And now another thing that's coming out of this is an attempt at an ebook or a book, if you will. So if you're interested in taking a look at it, if you're a freelancer, you've got some questions, please feel free to reach out to me at that website. And I can send you an initial draft of part of it, and you can tell me is this helpful, is this not helpful. The few people that I've had some feedback from so far have said yes, this is helpful, but I can certainly get some more opinions and feedback from some people as I continue to write. So,
well, you had another domain in there in your subtitle. Was it the same thing?
A freelance path, perhaps.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had that as well too. That is a community that I'd set up also for people who are freelancers. Then they would like, there are some freelancer communities around there. I like to think that ours is, while it's small, we do help each other a bit more than perhaps some other communities with a lot of people. So that is, I won't say too much more about that, but if you're a freelancer, please feel free to reach out to me directly. Go to Freelance Path, go to the current domain that you see, and just reach out and let's see if we can help each other.
Well, that's great to know. I'm sure many of the listeners of this podcast are also freelancers, and we'll appreciate
I hope so.
That. Oh, I'm sure they are. Many of them, probably the majority, I don't know.
Cool.
Well, on that note, practically ended this podcast. This will be published already in 2013 for sure. And so I wish you all a great 2013. I'm sorry for all those that were disappointed the world did not end in December 21. But on the positive side, Russian President Putin said he already knows when the world it will end. It's approximately in 4 billion years. So do not be disappointed in that. The world will end anyway. It's just a matter of time. And with that, that is all for now. I hope to see you back in 2013.
You will. Adios.
Bye.